In China, officials say the huge wave of COVID-19 infections is coming to an end, and that visits to what are called fever clinics fell 40% last week. Now, official pronouncements from Beijing have long been questioned inside and outside China. The good news is we now get a firsthand take on what it was like in China this past fall and winter. Deborah Seligson returned from a trip to China 3 weeks ago. She is a political science professor at Villanova University and former advisor to the U.S. Embassy in Beijing. Deb Seligson, nice to talk to you again.
Hi, Scott.
So you are recently back from a trip in China in November, December, part of January, and you saw firsthand the big change. But initially, you were there during the lockdown, and then it, of course, opened up. Can you go back to the lockdown when you landed in October? I understand you were quarantined for 19 days total.
Yes. So first of all, most people weren't locked down most of the time. And through the end of 2021, mostly there weren't very many cases many places. And there were very few lockdowns after the initial Wuhan lockdown. But then in 2022 with Omicron, it moved so much more quickly. Their original methods of just tracking and tracing cases just wasn't working very well. And so they ran into problems that originally led to that big Shanghai lockdown in the spring and just sort of rolling series of lockdowns in various places. And then as fall headed toward winter, there were just more and more cases. So when I arrived in the middle of October, there were growing numbers of cases, but it was very much under the radar. I was in quarantine, which meant for the first 10 days, essentially a closed loop quarantine hotel. After that, I went to Beijing and they said, you were in Shanghai, there are cases in Shanghai, you have to quarantine again. Added together, it wound up 19 days. And then I got out and it was early November. Things were still feeling a little bit normal, but everybody was terrified, not only of getting sick, but that if you got sick, you'd be sent to a fever hospital. And people really didn't want that. So people were already very reluctant to travel outside their community. A lot of people would just go to work, go home, not go anywhere else. And there was like regular testing. And in Beijing, if you hadn't been tested, usually within 48 or 72 hours, you couldn't get in anywhere.
Yeah. Did you have conversations with people about fears of being locked in their apartments?
So that was definitely something that was a source of anxiety. In some areas, they did tend to do things like chain doors. The people I met who actually experienced chain doors, it was in the fever hotels. They would just be like locked in at night. And that definitely caused huge anxiety. And I think one of the things about the Urumqi fire was it just reified that anxiety that everybody was feeling, because there was a feeling in November that the whole country was about to be locked down, or certainly a lot of cities like Beijing.
And then, of course, we had this lifting of so many of the controls from far away. It felt like it was this immediate lifting. What did it feel like inside China?
So it did feel like an immediate lifting. Most people felt like it made them more worried about getting sick. In fact, the streets were completely deserted. But by the time they lifted it, COVID was everywhere. And I know of only two people who didn't get sick.
Oh my goodness.
We all got sick within 3 weeks.
So was there a time when everyone got sick and then they got past it?
So for the vast majority of people, by the end of December, they were finished with COVID and they were out and about again. And you can see it in subway ridership numbers. That last week before I left Beijing was the first time since I'd been back that I encountered traffic jams. I mean, that's how much people were already controlling their movement in November. And then after everybody got sick, there was just this feeling of release, like, oh my goodness, we made it through this thing we were afraid of, and now we're able to sort of move on.
So now you're back here in the States, and just a couple questions as you think about your trip. First of all, is it clear to you why suddenly China opened up so many of these rules, this sudden apparent reversal?
I think the basic reason is that the system itself completely collapsed on itself, that the testing system actually only worked when most people were testing negative, because they were doing the tests in these batches or pools of 10 people. And if they're all negative, everybody got a negative. But if there's one positive in the mix, they had to chase down 10 people and retest them all. I was in two positive pools and then had to be retested. And each time it took way too long for them to notify me. If I had actually been the positive person, I would have already infected the neighborhood.
Yeah.
That was imploding. And then these fever hospitals were at maximum capacity. And some of the local governments were already, you know, announcing they were going to have to do these big procurements for building new fever hospitals. And I think the central government got the message that there was no money for these. I think a lot of the pressure was just the logistics of their own system not working anymore. And then I think they were getting huge pressure from business. I suspect there were a lot of Chinese corporate executives just telling the leadership quietly how bad the economy was and how much things were being hurt. And I think the evidence that the economics was one of the big drivers is that when they did the opening up December 7th, they opened up a lot more outside in the real economy than they did on university campuses, even though a lot of the protests were on university campuses. And then why suddenly? I think because when they tried the gradual route in November, it didn't work.
Yeah. I mean, maybe it was, as you're describing, the wave of Omicron, as it has been in so much of the world, was just too big. And finally, Deb, what do you take away from this trip as you think about China going forward? Right, people can get Omicron again. A lot of people may be in this kind of magical 3 months of immunity. But when you think about China, its economy, its people, what big lessons do you take away?
So if I were going to predict, and I'm not actually an economic forecaster, I think, you know, this is going to be a year where there's a lot of economic activity. I think for those that used to have contacts, they've been feeling really cut off from the world for 3 years. As for this problem that COVID now seems to be this kind of perennial thing, it does seem, certainly most people in China have not wrapped their minds around it. And it's not clear to me the Chinese government has really thought that through yet, what kinds of treatments they need to have available all the time because people are going to get COVID again. I think one thing that we didn't discuss was that most of the people who weren't vaccinated were the urban elderly. The Chinese government, they started with working age population because there was no COVID around. So they decided to start with the people who would be most likely to transmit it in case of an outbreak.
Sure.
And that gave elderly people, including the doctors who treat elderly, the misapprehension that maybe there was something not so good about the vaccine for old people. And then also there was just so much anti-vax propaganda. The Chinese government was kind of repeating any negative things said about the mRNAs to try to claim their vaccines were better. But Chinese people were also getting from overseas, especially urban people, Western articles that just said the Chinese vaccine was bad, which was overstating the issues with the Chinese vaccine by a lot.
Deborah Seligson, Villanova University. Deb, thanks so much for the time. And, you know, when you go back, we're going to check in with you again.
Thanks so much.